This is the State of Things live from Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. I'm Frank Stachow. During the fight for civil rights, newspapers across the South were full of faces of college students protesting, marching, and sitting in. But in High Point, it was secondary students at William Penn High School who took the lead in fighting against segregation.
In the evening times, after school, about 6 or 7 o'clock, we would be out there on the picket line, and mostly about 4 or 5 young ladies and 3 or 4 young men. And, of course, those rebel rousers would come by, and it would be cold, throw water on us.
Wow.
But we stayed there.
That's a clip of Arlene Wilkes, a William Penn High School student who participated in the sit-ins and protests at High Point. Her story was collected as part of the William Penn Project, a service learning initiative at High Point University that collected oral histories. Paul Ringel directs the project. He's a history professor at High Point University. Welcome back to the State of Things, Paul. Good to have you here again.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Aaron Flynn is with us. Aaron participated in the class as a freshman at High Point and has since graduated and currently serves as an AmeriCorps and VISTA volunteer. Good to have you. And Hank Presley was a student at William Penn High School. He acted as a community liaison for the project, currently a teacher at Penn Griffin School for the Arts, the school that stands in William Penn's place. Great to have you here, Hank. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Paul, tell us more about this project. What's behind it?
Sure. Well, I started this 4 years ago. I've been teaching for a while a class called the History Detectives, which is a kind of a history lab class where we take students through a single historical issue for the whole semester. And I was looking for a new topic, and I knew a little bit about William Penn. I knew a little bit about the sit-ins, which I'm sure we'll get to. And I also knew that the service learning program at High Point University had a really big presence over on Washington Street, which is was kind of one of the main Black business and cultural centers in High Point. So I spoke to Joe Blosser, who's the director of the service learning program, and said that I was interested in potentially doing my next project on William Penn. He said, well, why don't we go over to Penn Griffin and see what they think? And so Joe and I went over there, and that's when I met Hank.
Hank, tell us more about the role that William Penn played. This is a high school. We're used to thinking of, first of all, a lot of adults who
yes.
had charge of that movement and were surprised when college students took a role, and
indeed.
Even more surprised when high school students.
Yes.
Tell us about William Penn and his role. You were there.
Well, I was almost there whenever this began. My older siblings, I had 6 siblings who graduated William Penn ahead of me. My third eldest sibling, Mayella Presley, was a member of the 26 students who marched from William Penn and that original sit-in demonstration. So the history of William Penn was one of engagement because of where we were, where the school was. It was right in the middle of town, and we were blessed to have a very progressive minister in the area. His name was B. Elton Cox, and he was very much the engine that ignited the demonstrations in High Point. So it was... I came along later. I was 5 years behind my sister in my demonstrations. Their demonstration was in 1960, and then as a junior in high school, I participated in what may have been the last of the major demonstrations or marches. So I got that last bit of...
Tell us what you know about that first demonstration, 1960. This is very early in the movement. What were the grounds for that demonstration, and what precisely took place?
Well, it was, at the time, you know, the Jim Crow laws were pretty much the rule of the land. So public accommodations were what were being sought, you know, more access to fair and equal public accommodations. So the demonstrations were an act of civil disobedience to make things uncomfortable for the powers that be, to perhaps persuade them to open up the public accommodations. In the end, it was very successful.
What were they doing? What was the demonstration?
Well, the demonstrations were they started on the campus of William Penn, and they were marches. There was a silent march from the campus all the way up Washington Street, across Centennial, up to Main Street, down Main Street in front of the Center Theater, down Main Street to Russell Street, back up Hamilton Street, and it was the traditional path of our homecoming parades as well. So all of the participants in the demonstrations were very familiar with the path of the demonstrations. So it was, I know that the same is true for those people who demonstrated ahead of me, but we were all encouraged or instructed to be quiet and respectful and keep our eyes straight ahead. So we marched, and it was effective, as I said before. It was met with, for those first demonstrators, a lot of physical abuse. Now, I don't know if there were any injuries that were sustained as a part of it. I don't recall that ever happened. But the abuse, as Arlene spoke of earlier, who was a classmate of my sister's, Arlene spoke of the being liquids being thrown onto mm-hmm. them, and of course the verbal abuse and the taunting. So those were some brave kids in those days. I experienced the same thing, except it was verbal abuse that we experienced mostly. So it was just a bit.
You said it was effective. What changed?
Public accommodations changed. Yeah. So in High Point, I think that we were fortunate to realize the opening of public accommodations more quickly than some of the other cities. The international home furnishings market was a target. So in those days, High Point had four seasonal furniture markets. And of course, it was the epicenter of a whole lot of international trade in North Carolina. So all of the visitors who came would have been treated to civil rights demonstrations had the public accommodations not been afforded. So that was what was put on the table, and ultimately that was what worked.
Fascinating stuff. So Aaron, you come along a generation and a half later, maybe two. I don't know how far along I am. I could be three generations away from this now. Who knows? But Aaron, there you are, and you hear about this. Tell us what your reaction was, what you knew about any of this when you got this assignment.
Yeah, so when I started the class, I really didn't know what I was getting into. Dr. Engel kind of asked me if I wanted to take it, and I wasn't even a history major, so I didn't really know what I was getting into. But yeah, I didn't even know Washington Street existed because I hadn't been much outside of the campus. I didn't have a car, so there wasn't a lot that I could explore. There's not a lot of really good sidewalks right by the university either. So, and Washington Street is a little tucked away, so if you're not looking for it, it's kind of hard to get to.
But it's close to the campus, right?
It is very close to the campus. Yeah. It's maybe, two blocks away from the campus?
4 blocks, maybe.
4 blocks away from the campus. So, I don't think I'd really spent any time south of the campus.
What was it like for you to finally to meet some of these folks and start talking with them about their experience? Because I'm wondering if it's the first time anyone's asked since then.
Yeah, it was eye-opening for me, especially with Mr. Presley, because he was the first person I had met from Penn Griffin High School. It was William Penn at the time. So he was the first person I had met, and it was really good to get his interview from that as well. So it was really eye-opening.
I wonder if it changed for you any of your understanding, because it was surprising for me to learn that high school students in 1960 in a place like High Point, North Carolina, I keep intensifying this, knew the abuse, and perhaps it could have been even greater. And knowing that that's what you're going to endure and encounter, I was shocked to hear that high school kids had done that.
Yeah, I was really shocked, especially during our interviews, because we had some similarities, but there were a lot of differences, too. I grew up right outside of San Francisco, California, so I might not have had the same kind of historical background, even in just my history classes growing up, because it was so foreign being on the other side of the country. So,
Hank Presley, what was that like, and what were the grown-ups saying when the kids decided to do this?
That's a great question. I think us as a community having such a diverse population, and we're talking about a culturally diverse population of black people in a town where there was not a great emphasis on public education beyond high school. So there never has been a black institution of higher learning in High Point, and probably never will be. But it's like, so the emphasis had to start at William Penn. So parents were, and I can speak from the perspective of my parents. My parents were born on cotton farms in South Carolina, you know, at, right after the turn of the 20th century. And so their perspective on social progressivism was just a bit different than it was for those parents who perhaps grew up in Charlotte or Atlanta or something like that. So my parents were not those people who were at our home speaking out about being politically militant. As a matter of fact, they were afraid of it. Mm-hmm. So my sister was one of those people who would not have shared with our parents ahead of time what she planned to do. And the same is true. Yeah. Whenever it was my time to participate in it, my parents didn't know about it.
Did they find out, and what'd they do?
They found out about it, but there was since there was no negative result of it, and it's like they almost they pushed it to the side. But it was almost as though it's like you have to be careful with this.
I think this shines a light on the complexity of this moment that we tend to gloss over, and particularly as it moves farther and farther behind us in the rearview mirror. All of the complex currents and the dynamics that you were facing, parents and communities divided over how far and how fast, yes, and who should participate, worried certainly about their children, and segregated schools that had formed, as you say, a profound and important, had become an important part of this community, yes, albeit segregated. So while no one would ever want to defend segregation, that's cool, and I think there's some testimony. We have one of the interviews here with Mary Lou Blankeney, who's talking about the school principal at the time. The school's principal was Sam Burford, and here's what she had to say when she was interviewed.
His thing was to make us understand, I am here for you. I'm trying to get you ready to face this world that you're going out there into, and it's not a fair world. You will not find equality when you go out there, but you go out there, and we're going to give you the best tools you can take with you to get out there and fight for your spot in the world. And that was one of the things that he wanted to do for us.
That's a clip of Mary Lou Blakeney, who's talking about former William Penn High School principal Sam Burford. Her oral history was collected as part of the William Penn Project, and I'm talking with the project director, High Point University history professor Paul Ringel, project participants Aaron Flynn and Hank Presley. So talk more about that and what that school meant to people in the community.
Well, William Penn was the a shining light. You know, it was very much a beacon to the black community. There were disparate factions of black community all over the town, say the South Side, the East Side, and somewhat in the North Side. But it's like they all pointed to William Penn, because William Penn is where every child wound up. And parents, as I stated before, you know, there was not this great emphasis on public education beyond high school, but it's like a great high school education was of utmost importance. Booker T. Washington had been a visitor at William Penn, and Booker T. Washington, you know, was a proponent of not being so militantly liberal and progressive. You know, just stay in your place and work hard, and things will be good. And so for centuries, or I'm sorry, for decades, it was the case that parents felt the same way in the black neighborhood. But William Penn was the place where, in addition to getting great foundations in science and math, we got outstanding educations in the humanities. And that's what I really appreciate.
Paul Ringel, let's talk about getting students ready for a project like this and something that we might call cultural competence, going into a neighborhood, asking these questions from the outside. How do you prepare your students for a project like this?
Well, I needed outside help because I wasn't trained as an oral historian either. So I went to Chapel Hill because University of North Carolina has one of the best oral history programs in the country, Southern Oral History Program. And I brought in a couple of their students and had them do a training with our students, and then we had the students interview each other and interview their roommates and practice several times to make sure that they were not just sort of leading them towards specific answers, mm-hmm. but also you don't want to just ask a wide open question and mm-hmm. let the interviewee go anywhere they want. So we had them practice, and they also had to practice just with the technology. They were nervous about, oh, what happens if I forget to turn on the recorder, or I mm-hmm. lose part of it. So they practice that, and then we sent them out, and they got better at it. You know, I tried to make sure that everybody got to do at least two, because the first time they were going to be nervous, and they would get better, and they would see that it got easy.
What about the idea that you're actually, we like to think we're in a post-racial world. We know we're not. There are cultural boundaries, whether we like them or not. How do you prepare students for that and being able to talk that way across boundaries that we wish weren't here?
Well, I tried to bring some of the alums into the classroom to talk about some of their experiences, and I tried to give them context in the readings that we were doing. There's no book on the civil rights movement in High Point, but there are books on Greensboro and Chapel Hill and other places. So I tried to give them some reading background on experience of what happened in Greensboro and what was happening statewide, and give them some context. And then, you know, we had students of different races and classes in the classroom, and I tried to get them to sort of challenge each other's perspectives as well.
Aaron Flynn, let me ask you about this. You're with VISTA now and AmeriCorps. Is that choice in any way governed by your experience in this?
Yeah, I think that it was really heavily influenced on it, especially since right now I am in the south side of High Point, and the elementary school that I'm working at is actually one of the schools that would have been a feeder school for William Penn High School. And that was kind of the first time that I had seen racial tension within High Point, because I'd never been in a like historically black area in High Point before this class. And now I'm working in one every single day.
Hank Presley, what was it like to hear that there was any interest in this? I mean, I'm wondering how much attention those demonstrations got at the time, and what does it mean to you that it's getting at least this attention now?
Well, you know, speaking from the perspective of Dr. Ringel coming over, I was ecstatic whenever I heard about the initial effort, and then whenever I got a chance to talk with Dr. Ringel and his group that were at the school. And so I was really excited, because I knew for a fact, you know, as president of my alumni association, that I'd get the opportunity to speak with a lot of people who had actually lived this history and would be very good resources for the interviews and to contribute to the history. So I was really excited about that. In addition to getting my students, the high school students there, to participate in it, and I thought that they did an awesome job as well. I'd like to give them kudos.
What's going on in that building now, the Penn Griffin School of the Arts?
Each year, the drama or arts department puts on a commemorative program that honors the February 11th sit-down. And we'd like to invite the community at large to participate with us on February the 9th this year at Penn Griffin School for the Arts in High Point.
Hank Presley was a student at William Penn High School, is now a teacher at Penn Griffin High School for the Arts. Paul Ringel, a history professor at High Point University and director of the William Penn Project. Aaron Flynn, an AmeriCorps and VISTA member who participated in the project. Thank you all for being on the program. Now, there is a public premiere of the William Penn Project website at the Penn Griffin School of the Arts, February 9th, as we just said, and on the same day, students who participated in the High Point sit-in will be honored with a ceremony at the school. We've got that information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a conversation with Lorena Guillen on how she represented immigrant stories in her music, and we'll get a little sample of that right now.
Speak.